But at the end of the day, you know, listen, if you want an NHL team, Gary Bettman, you couldn't ask for a better commissioner. Mm-hmm. If you look at franchise values, look at the revenue streams, where they were and where they are now, it's a much better business. It's, I mean, the salary cap alone, which I don't like, but, you know, as an owner, you love it. I mean,
yeah, you like the Premier League.
I like the Premier League. I do like the Premier League.
A lot of people in the city like the Premier League right now.
They would like the Premier League. They would like the Premier League. I'm not a big fan of the salary cap. I do find it interesting that, you know, owners who proclaim themselves as great capitalists fight for the entry draft, restrictions on free agency.
Yeah.
You know, they want taxpayer funded arenas, salary caps. All that stuff.
All the things that our next guest has to tweet about almost on a daily basis.
And he's sick of hearing about it from me.
Our hockey insider, Darren Dreger, joining us. What's up, Dregs? How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. Do you like the salary cap? Because Gord hates it.
Well, that's because Gord is a wealthy man. and
what?
Yeah, he's not worried about the little people. Yeah. I would like to see an amendment to the salary cap. Ray Ferraro and I talk about this often on the podcast. I think that the mechanism of the salary cap could be tweaked moving forward, like where you have a franchise allotment or some sort of structure where, okay, maybe there's some type of penalty, whatever that penalty is, but it allows for creativity and it juices the market a little bit. But you abandon the salary cap, and then your small market teams just get swallowed up in the process. Well, so that would be my concern.
Well, Dregs, I one of the things I proposed for a long time is if a player's been with you, say, for 6+ years, and you set him to an extension, a portion of that extension doesn't count towards the cap with you. If he leaves, it starts to count. And I'd like to see that. I think that would make a lot of sense. And the other thing is those small market teams in a lot of cases don't need a salary cap. They need more. Mm-hmm. They need more money from the big teams. They need better revenue sharing.
No, that's fair. And so again, maybe one goes with the other, right? Yeah. And I'd be certainly supportive of that because look, you know, when you look at some of these smaller market teams, hey, I'll throw it out there: the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, there's word on the street, not that you're going to get anyone from Arizona to verify this, but their target is a $65 million salary cap and $50 million in payout cash going into next season. So that's why you're seeing the Connor Garland trade speculation. Legit, he's available. You know, you can appreciate why they want to move away from Oliver Ekman-Larsson and some of the other bigger contracts, but you know, it's a tough world to compete at any level, let alone a competitive one, when your salary is $50,000 cash and you're playing with a payroll of or a cap of $65 million.
Well, it seems pretty competitive right now in terms of trying to acquire Zach Hyman. You tweeted a few hours ago that the belief is that 7 years is the target and could climb as high as $5.5 million a year. Are you surprised at all with the term or the money?
Well, and look, I mean, let's be prepared to amend anything at any time until pen is put to paper and he's under contract, right? 5.5 times 7 seems a lot for Zach Hyman to me, but I also appreciate he's a heck of a hockey player and he's going to make the Edmonton Oilers better if they can get a deal done. You know, the quicker they can get that deal done, that depends on what sort of arrangement they can make via trade with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't think that the Maple Leafs have the same idea of what the compensation should be that the Edmonton Oilers do. I'm sure Edmonton, Kenny Holland is going into conversations with Kyle Dubas thinking it's going to be a sixth or seventh round pick. And I don't think that Dubas feels that way. So that in and of itself has to play out. But look, you know, if it really is down to two teams, and it really is down to one team being Edmonton and Toronto is kind of there as the home club, then is there really a risk or a gamble in Holland and the Oilers waiting until July 28th where they can sign the maximum 7-year term, but then there's zero compensation? And there might not be a whole lot of risk in that. But if the money is 5.5 or higher, maybe the Oilers want that eighth year to bring the AAV down a little bit. And the only way of getting that eighth year is for the Toronto Maple Leafs to sign Zach Hyman and then trade him to the Edmonton Oilers.
Darren, let's just game plan this for a second. Okay, Edmonton gives him an offer, 7 years, $5.5 million. So that's $38.5 million total. For the Leafs on an 8-year deal, that's $4.8 million, just a shade over $4.8 million. Is anything in that range doable for them, or is that out of their reach?
Right now, I think it feels like it's out of their reach. I still think that there's at least a hint of hope, Toronto-related. But it also comes down to, some of the framework of the contract. Right, Gordon? And what I mean by that is, what about the no-move clause and the protection clauses? Maybe Toronto is comfortable going with a longer term, a maximum term, provided they have some flexibility to move Zach if the contract starts to get a little cumbersome by year 4, 5, or 6 or whatever it is. I feel like it's a long shot, but I think anything under 5 for the Toronto Maple Leafs is worth more conversation about at this stage.
And Dregs, Zach Hyman's going to go out and get the best deal possible for him, and no one would begrudge him for that. There's got to be an element to a fit, though, for him as well, given how he plays. Like, I just think of, look at the Taylor Hall situation, and I don't know if he's leaving money on the table somewhere else, but it worked in Boston, and that's got to be part of the decision for Taylor Hall. Do you hear the same from Zach Hyman's camp, that obviously they want the best deal, but he has a certain skill set that works with certain teams better than others?
Well, I mean, if what we believe is going to happen happens, he's going from one pair of at least superstar status players in Matthews and Marner to another in McDavid and Draisaitl. Aside from moving away from home, that's a pretty slick transition if you're Zach Hyman. Who knows the possibilities that might come along with that. I mean, are you playing with McDavid? Are you playing with Draisaitl? Do they slide Ryan Nugent-Hopkins to center? Are you with him in the top six? I mean, there's so many things that from a hockey standpoint have to be intriguing for Hyman. He spent time with those guys, with the Oilers, that is. I'm not going to get specific to with who. I think you can assume that there was a discussion, a meeting with Holland in Edmonton yesterday. He toured the city, and as Gord knows, Edmonton's a beautiful place to visit this time of year. Mm-hmm. Visit it in January, it's not as nice. But, it's going to be a very competitive hockey club.
Yeah, and you know what, Dregs? I think part of that is, and Ken Holland knows this better than anyone, Detroit's not exactly a magnet for people. But when you're winning, look, Duncan Keith told the Hawks he'd only wait for one team, Edmonton. So if you're winning and you have good players, it becomes more attractive, right? I mean,
absolutely.
If you're gonna dig the puck out, you might as well dig it out for guys who might do something.
Yeah,
yeah. I 100% agree with that, and I believe that. That's why I said I don't see that there's much risk if the Leafs and the Oilers can't come to terms of what the compensation should be for a trade. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that any team is going to magically surface that is going to woo Zach Hyman. I think then at that point, maybe the Toronto possibility becomes more of a reality. But there's a lot of work, I think, that the Maple Leafs have to do, as we've already discussed. The next best bet, again, is the Edmonton Oilers. And he's earned the right, by the way, to push for the extra dough. I mean, every unrestricted free agent has earned that right to see what the market is going to provide. And, Zach Hyman has identified Edmonton because of the fit here. It's not like the Oilers are the only team in the league that wants to get their hands on Zach Hyman. There's probably 15 others. Mm-hmm. It's just he seems to be, and seems to feel like that's the best fit there. So there's work to get done, but it feels like enough talk has taken place with Hyman involved, the agent Todd Reynolds, obviously the Oilers, to some degree the Maple Leafs, that it's not likely going to derail from Edmonton at this stage.
Joined by your hockey insider, Darren Dreger, and since Gord brought up the Red Wings, I'll bring up Alex Nedeljkovic. Mm-hmm. Seems like a pretty shrewd move by Steve Yzerman.
I would think so. And that shouldn't surprise anyone, you know, because Yzerman historically slides under the radar and makes some interesting ads. And for me, this is one of them. You know, there's some head scratching around the Carolina Hurricanes as to why it came to this. Nedeljkovic has arb rights, and it sounds like his ask reportedly was in the vicinity of 3.5, which Tom Dunnan and the Carolina Hurricanes just weren't willing to buck up with. So when you go to arb, you know, you risk that award being that or potentially more. And then at that point, you know, what are you left with? You walk away and get nothing? Well, you're not going to do that. So, right. You know, every team has a breaking point on the player. This one is a little bit strange, to be fair, but Steve Yzerman swoops in and takes sound advantage of it. And then to pay what he paid on Peck and the right Jonathan Bernier, who's soon to be an unrestricted free agent, I mean, he really paid a third-round pick. And then he gets a deal done at 2.5 and 3.5 on a two-year deal for Nedeljkovic. So I think this is tidy work by the general manager of the Red Wings.
Let me ask you about this. A lot of talk about the Seattle expansion draft. In 2017, yeah. Vegas made 10 draft consideration deals, so a deal where they got an asset in exchange for not taking a certain player and taking yeah. someone else instead. And then Vegas made a series of deals in the next few days, four of them, in fact, the day after the draft. But we've seen one trade so far and no draft consideration trades. Why do you think that is?
You know what? I think it's twofold, Gord. One, Ron Francis, as you know, is not an overly aggressive general manager. And that's I'm not stating that as a criticism of the management of Ron Francis. That's just not the way he goes about business. He's very, very methodical, and he's extraordinarily patient and conservative in that process. And I feel like that's been his approach since being named general manager for the Seattle Kraken. His asking price was exceptionally high of every general manager who was trying to get Ron to push away from a player they didn't want to lose. And by high, I mean, we're talking about a first-round draft pick and a third-round draft pick as part of a package. That's just to move away from a player who that club just didn't want to have to expose. And the second part of this is pretty obvious. You know, when the Vegas Golden Knights came into the league, the managers didn't really know what to expect. They didn't have a whole lot of time to process, to put their staff onto it, to pour through all of the expansion details, the restrictions, all of that, and to apply it to the depth within their roster. And so this time around, they've had lots of time. And I honestly, Gord, I don't know about you, but I couldn't find a general manager who didn't say, you know what, I'm going to lose a good player. I'm just accepting that I'm losing a good player. I'd rather lose one piece, which, yes, is a good player, as opposed to at least two pieces, maybe more, to keep Ron Francis away from that player I don't want him. Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, that's just the way it boiled down, I think.
And Greg, to your point, I think a lot of GMs that made those draft consideration deals in 2017 regretted them.
For sure.
I mean, you know, it's certainly, I mean, you couldn't have predicted that some of those guys would break out the way they did. But, man, I mean, you know, like, the first-round pick to take the Clarkson deal, the first-round pick to take the Garrison deal, you know, all the things they did to, it was a, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised that there wasn't more action today. I mean, there was some, and there'll be more around Seattle moving forward. You know, they've got a stockpile of defense, and that seems to be the strength of their roster right now. They're going to have to add some pieces up front. They're competitive, but who's scoring goals, you know, for Seattle Kraken? Out of the gate, their goaltending is young. So look, there's a lot of time, but right now they're shifting their focus to round one tomorrow and then the rest of the NHL draft on Saturday. And then they've got free agency and all of those things. So they haven't closed shop by a long shot, but it just felt like when the freeze lifted at 1 o'clock Eastern, we were going to learn a lot more. But, you know, there were some deals. It was an interesting day. And, you know, Francis is going to sign free agents. I'd be surprised if Jaden Schwartz doesn't end up in Seattle as an example. So there's still a lot of work to be done. I just thought that Seattle might be a little bit more active today.
A lot of work to be done. That could be your motto. Got the draft tomorrow.
Oh, no kidding.
Draft Saturday. Free agent frenzy. Keep that phone plugged in and charged and ready to go, Dregs. We appreciate you coming on the show, and enjoy the weekend.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
There's our hockey insider, Darren Dreger, getting set for the NHL draft, which begins tomorrow. We're in the in-between of the expansion and the entry draft and then the free agent frenzy, and then maybe he takes some time off. I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't even get to Montreal, and just the news from Montreal today. You know, Mark Bergevin, the GM, was clearly shaken, saying that Shea Weber won't play this season and likely won't play again. And just what a...
You just think of how well he played in the postseason and what he must have been going through.
Right, but just what a... I mean, there's literally no one who's been around Shea Weber, from management to coaches to teammates. I've literally never heard anyone say a bad word about him. Literally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just what you get is a sense of reverence about him as a player, as a person. You know, guys in Nashville talk about he's a way better passer than you know. You know about the shot. You know about the toughness.
You don't think of that when you think of Shea Weber.
And it's funny, you know, you think about the first time you saw someone, and for me, it's usually the World Junior is the first time I see a player. But in his case, we went to Kelowna after the fires in 2003. So we went the following season for a fundraiser to raise money for the fire victims. And part of the thing was we ran a kids' hockey clinic, and then we were on the ice with the Kelowna Rockets for their practice. And so we go out on the ice, and this freight train goes by me. And then he starts shooting pucks and rockets. And I said to Mark Habscheid, who's the coach of Kelowna, who's that guy?
Yeah.
He's that Shea Weber. He's a second-round pick in Nashville. And I said, a second-round pick? Well, he'd broken his leg, I think, in his draft year. He didn't play a lot in his draft year, and he kind of slipped down in the draft. I think Bergeron went in the second round of that draft. Patrice Bergeron went in the second round of that.
Was that like the draft?
Yeah, the 03 draft.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can, and one of the reasons it's such a great draft, those guys all went back to junior into college. But Weber was, so you're watching this guy, and the goalie for Kelowna said he's not allowed to really shoot at me in practice. We don't let him do that.
Right.
And so of course in the World Junior in 05 he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he is just it's just so sad because it's not doesn't sound like it's ending on his terms, and you could see it. After, you know, the last game of the
tears and the emotion, like
you could see there was more to it than just losing a playoff series.
Yeah.
He knew.